The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
My friend Ron Cantor, living in Israel, actually got to see some of the footage from the October 7th massacre. We'll talk about it today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, biblical scholar and cultural commentator, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice for moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Call 866-34-TRUTH to get on The Line of Fire. And now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast here on The Line of Fire. I'm about to bring on the phone with us my almost lifelong friend. Since I was 28, he was 18, so the better part of our lives, we've been friends, colleagues. Ron Cantor, American, now an Israeli citizen with his Israeli wife, living there many years. And we've got so much to talk about, but I do want to open the phones, 866-34-TRUTH. If you differ with Ron and me and our views about Israel today, if you don't believe that Israel today is fulfillment of prophecy, if you believe that the term replacement theology is an unfair term to describe your beliefs, if you believe we're on the wrong side of justice now when it comes to our views of the conflict between Israel and Hamas, by all means, give us a call. We'd both be happy to talk to you. 866-34-TRUTH. Without further ado, Ron, welcome back to The Line of Fire.
Hey, Mike, it's great to be here.
So, Ron, I want to just dive right in with you. There is the traumatizing of the whole nation in that so many people were slaughtered, so many were wounded, so many were raped, abused, so many taken hostage, that it affects the whole nation. It's not like just a little pocket here, a little pocket there. It's a small country to start. You're joined together by suffering. And now a case like this is just so massively widespread. The funerals, the fact that so many friends are now serving in the military, called up on reserve. So everyone's heavily affected already. But Ron, how was it that you got to see actual footage? It's been shown to select people, journalists, political leaders, etc. How did you get to see the footage, and how did that affect you beyond everything we've known so far?
Yeah, well, I just want to comment first on what you said at the beginning, how it's the massacre has affected us as a nation. Just imagine, 9/11 times 15. That's what President Biden said when he was in Israel.
Yep.
But it's really more than that, because 9/11, they flew planes into towers. They didn't actually see people face to face. The terrorists were dead before they actually even killed anybody. Whereas on October 7th or 10/7, they looked Jews in the eyes and they murdered them. They raped them and they killed them while they were raping them. It was the most brutal, sadistic event, I don't know, since Nazism. So, regarding the footage, and you can imagine how that affects the people. You wake up every day and you wonder, did this really happen? And it is an entire nation. So, yeah, we're in shock. We're in mourning. And yet at the same time, like 9/11, there's a sense of unity and we're together in this. But I was able to see this footage because being – I'm kind of in this weird position as a Messianic Jew. I'm also so as a Messianic Jew, I would not have been invited. But because I'm the regional director for God TV, I kind of muscled my way in there. And I heard about the event for faith-based journalists. I applied to go see it. They turned me down. I appealed to them and said, no, I won't go into it, but they let me in. They gave me an invitation. And once I got the invitation, honestly, I was under quite a bit of stress. Do I really want to see this?
Yeah, because you can't
horror movies.
You can't unsee it.
Right. And, the last horror movie I saw when I was 15 years old, and I couldn't sleep for a month. And now as a believer, do I really want to expose my soul to such horrible images? But on the other hand, as a communicator, as a journalist, as a voice, I felt like, well, I have to. And what I saw was, beyond belief. I'll just give you a few descriptions. I'm not sure how much time we have on this segment, but you just stop me if you need to. But One of the first images we saw was it's 6:30 in the morning. You can see it on the clock, on the video.
Let me just jump in. So, folks, this imagery is 43 minutes of footage put together by the IDF. So some of it is from the body cams of the Hamas murderers. They wanted to film this. They wanted to memorialize it. They wanted to use it to terrorize even more. Some of it was from cell phones of victims that were then recovered afterwards from other cameras that were active. So it's a compilation, but a lot of it is actually the body cams of the Hamas terrorists themselves. So that's how this was put together. And that's why you can actually see what happened in front of people's eyes there. Okay, so back to you, Ron.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not even sure they planned for it to be so gruesome, because I don't know why anybody would want to tape that and give the evidence over, because now they're denying it. You know, oh, there were no babies killed. There were, you know, we didn't do this. We didn't rape anybody. But there's eyewitnesses. There's evidence. What I think happened, Mike, is as they came over, first of all, they were on drugs. They took some sort of cheap man's cocaine.
Yep.
And, you know, it's demonic. When you kill somebody, you know, there is a demonic delight. It's an addiction. And it reminds me of when Titus conquered Jerusalem. He didn't expect him to destroy the temple. He wouldn't. I mean, it's a beautiful structure. Why would you tear it down? But the historians say that once the soldiers got in, they just went nuts as they began to murder people and kill, and then they destroyed the temple. As these guys came over, you know, and once they started killing, they could not get enough of it. And that was probably the biggest thing on the videos that we saw, was the pure joy. There is a recording, I play it on Arabic, but it's of a son calling his parents with the cell phone of a woman that he just killed. And he said, I just killed her and her husband, and he's rejoicing. I'm saying it monotone, but he is so excited. I killed 10 Jews with my bare hands. And his parents are saying, God bless you. We wish we were there with you. It's unheard of. But one of the first images I saw was a father and his two sons. I don't know where the mother was at the time, but it's 6:30 in the morning. They run outside, and they go into what's called the Migunit, which is a outside safe room for people who live in farming communities or whatever. So they run out, and they go through their backyard into the Migunit. And next thing you know, you see three terrorists jump over the fence, and they throw a grenade into the Migunit. It explodes. The father comes stumbling out. He's still alive. He's on his feet, and they just shoot him, and he's dead. They take the two kids, and again, I'm not making this. I saw this with my own eyes. They take the two kids, and they have to step over their dead father. They take them into the kitchen, and the two kids, two young boys, probably 8 and 10, they're in shock. Abba's dead, Abba's dead, one says to the other. The other one says, I'm blind, I can't see in my eye. And he says, tell me the truth, can you really? I mean, they're just in shock. Meanwhile, the terrorist goes to the refrigerator. I mean, for him, it's just like normal. He opens up the refrigerator, and then he says something to the boys in Arabic, almost like, is there anything good to eat? And then he reaches in the refrigerator and starts to drink a Coca-Cola. I mean, it's just beyond what he's just murdered somebody. I don't know what happened to the two boys, but the video, it scans to later in the day when the mother does come home, and she's with security forces, and she finds her husband dead, and she just collapses in agony, and just reliving it. What I saw, it was just unreal. You know, I saw a young boy, maybe, I don't know, 20 years old, pull up to the gate of his kibbutz. And we have gated communities, but it's not because they're expensive. It's for protection. And so you wait for the little orange gate. You see them all over Israel. You wait for the orange, yellow gate to open. And as he's waiting, two terrorists jump out and they just unload on him. And at first they miss, and you see him like put his hands up to try and, like, you can block a bullet. It's just instinct. And then he's just riddled with bullets until he slumps over dead. You know, I saw a dog, and, you know, there's just something about a pet, you know, that they're just so innocent and they just want to protect you. And this dog, rather large dog, comes around the corner of a house, and he doesn't realize that the terrorists are terrorists. And he almost seems friendly until they shoot him. And then he gets angry and he starts coming after them, and they shoot him again and again until he just slumps over dead. You know, we saw people hiding, and then the terrorists find them and they shoot them. One of the most gruesome things I saw, if anybody's still listening, was they took a dead body and they took a garden hoe and tried to chop off the corpse's head. I don't know who the corpse was, but they tried to chop his head off to bring it back as a trophy. One of them calls up, the commander in Gaza and says, "We've got this corpse. What do we do? Should we want to cut the head off?" He said, no, bring it back. Bring it back to Gaza." And now I'm quoting. That was a paraphrase. But now I'm quoting, "Bring it back so the people can play with it." Mm-hmm. Now, if you're out there listening and you're wondering, you know, hey, Hamas, they're freedom fighters. They've been oppressed. That is not fighting for your freedom. That is sick, demonic activity. Barbaric savagery.
Yeah, and, you know, Ron, and thanks for sharing this, and I'm forcing you to relive it, but thanks for doing it. It's a responsibility we have as witnesses. So when I've been seeing the faces of the people being released, the hostages being released, and all these little children, I mean, how mind-boggling that they're taken hostage. And then you realize that some are being released, but they have no mother and father. Because the mother and father were slaughtered, slaughtered in cold blood. And then you wonder the young women that are there starting to get released, what horror stories they're going to have to tell, how they were mistreated and abused. And on it goes, the forensic evidence, just the sickening, overwhelming nature of it. And that's what we have to keep shouting out. When we come back, we're going to talk very candidly about things in Israel today. In other words, why certain things happen. I want Ron to talk freely about his views of Prime Minister Netanyahu, and we'll talk honestly about what our attitude should be towards the Palestinians. Are there viable solutions moving forward? And how all this plays in, even with the gospel, with the good news of the Messiah bringing comfort in the midst of the suffering and pain. A lot more to come with my friend Ron Cantor. Don't go anywhere. We may get to some calls, especially those of you who differ with Ron and me in our positions politically, theologically. That's who I'd like to talk to. That's who Ron would like to talk to. We'll be right back.
This is Michael Ellison, founder of Trivita Wellness. I want you to hear an amazing testimony from my friend, James Robison, and most all of you will know of him. He and his wife, Betty, host the Life Today television program. Now, here is James.
Let me tell you about a miracle I experienced. My friend, Michael Ellison, he and his wife are our 40-year-plus best friends. Well, let me just say this to you. I had so much pain with what was called tennis elbow that I could hardly reach over and pick up the phone without pain, without it hurting me. I couldn't pick up something to drink, a glass of tea or anything. It was very difficult to do anything without wearing a tight strap. And then Michael shared the Nopal cactus juice with me, Nopalea. I began drinking about that much in the morning in a glass and that much later in the day. And in 3 months, I was a different person. I have now gone more than 10 years with no pain. Not better, well, I have no joint pain. I'm telling you, it did something to the inflammation in my body that was undeniable. Now, that's just my testimony. But that's been more than 10 years with no pain. Matter of fact, if I miss, for some foolish reason, a few days, I can feel it creeping back that fast. So give it a try. See if it helps relieve your pain. I hope it does like it has mine, because it worked for me.
No Pelea is supported by clinical studies for lowering inflammation and improving mobility, flexibility, and range of motion in the neck, back, and joints for less reliance on pain medication and improved quality of life. Call 800-771-5584 and use promo code BROWN25 to receive 25% off your order. As a new customer, 100% of your order goes to support the Line of Fire. Call 800-771-5584 or go online to trivita.com.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on the Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Thanks to our co-sponsor, Trivita. If you want to check out their amazing wellness products, which we highly recommend, which in turn they donated 100% of your first order back to the Line of Fire and a substantial portion of all subsequent orders, check them out at 800-771-5584. You don't have to say Dr. Brown sent you, because they'll know when you call in on that number. If you call after hours, they'll get back to you. Or you can go to trivita.com. If you go there, use the code BROWN25. That gets you the maximum discount and get your funds donated back to the Line of Fire. All right, again, if you differ theologically, politically, with my Messianic Jewish colleague and friend Ron Cantor, then we love to dialogue. One of the frustrations we have is that many times we'll talk passages like ships in the night, and there's no real dialogue with those with whom we differ. So we welcome that. 866-34-TRUTH. So, Ron, I want you to explain to our listeners and viewers, especially in America, that while there is overwhelming evangelical Christian support for Prime Minister Netanyahu, and while we all agree there are many good things he has done as a leader, that there is hardly that kind of support for Prime Minister Netanyahu within Israel. And even among Messianic Jews, there's not universal support. And then from there, you could even air some of your own concerns.
Yeah, well, you know, a month before this happened, things were so bad in Israel. And it hurts me to say this, but I shared it publicly in early September in several different messages I shared when I was traveling in the U.S. Because the Lord shared it with me, and I don't say that lightly. I don't run around saying God told me this, God told me that. But I was early September. I just felt very strongly that I heard the Lord say Israel is under judgment. And it was for two reasons. Primarily, the division in the country was the worst it has ever been since I've lived there. And I'll share in a minute why we were divided. And then tolerating racism. So regarding Prime Minister Netanyahu, and, you know, you just think of any politician who's been in power for, you know, 4 years in the 90s, and then since, I think, 2009, you know, almost 14 more years. It's hard to be in power that long and not eventually become corrupt. Right now, according to all reports, his biggest concern is staying in office after the war, as opposed to executing the war, meeting with different ministers, explaining why he's the only one that can lead us going forward. Of course, the big question is that, you know, you led us during the most horrible moment of the history of the country. There's never been a day like October 7th, and anybody who's prime minister should maybe not immediately, but eventually hand in their resignation. Right now, his approval ratings are lower than any other sitting prime minister in the history of the country since they've done that specific poll. But the issue that divided Israelis, and it's just so complicated, I'll try and make it really short, is he's under indictment, three charges of corruption that could land him in jail. He knows that. So he had to build in the last elections. Nobody wins elections in Israel. You just maybe win the most, the largest chunk. So the Likud had that with, I think, a little bit over 30 seats out of 120. So 25% or so. You can't govern with 25%. So what do? You build a coalition. It's not like in the U.S. where you vote for a president and that guy wins.
Mm-hmm.
In Israel, whoever gets the largest chunk goes around, does a little horse trading, and puts together a government. Now, in our last election, there are two smaller religious parties that the prime minister helped connect to each other so that they would have seats in the Knesset. If you don't get four seats, you don't get any seats. So there's no party with one seat, two seat. You got it.
Mm-hmm.
So he combined two far right, what we would call racist parties. I hate to say it. There's just like in every country in America, you have far right extremists, you know, white supremacists. In Israel, we have some bad apples as well. But he propped them up, not because he agrees with them, not because he likes them, but because he knew he would need them to form a coalition. And he was right. Without their seats in his government, he would not have had the 61 seats. He ended up with 64 seats. And then once they form this coalition, and God does not tolerate racism in any country. He hates it. He hates injustice. And, you know, one of the issues I have with some of my Palestinian pastor friends, and I tell them this, I said, you are so anti-Israel, but you'll never criticize Hamas. You'll never criticize the Palestinian Authority, which is corrupt. Hamas, I said, I, as an Israeli citizen, when my country is wrong, when my government's wrong, I'm going to use my freedom of speech, something they don't have, to be critical, to speak truth. That's the beauty of democracy. But in this government, the first thing they tried to do was dismantle the Supreme Court. Now, I'm simplifying the issue. I understand that for time's sake. But basically, like in America, the Supreme Court can overturn a law that is unconstitutional. We don't have a constitution. We have what's called the basic law, which is based on international human rights laws. So if the Knesset passed a law that said, you know, you can shoot a Messianic Jew, the Supreme Court hopefully would say that it goes against basic human rights. So we're going to throw that out. That's why you have a Supreme Court. Well, they wanted to take that authority to so that the Knesset, by a simple majority of 51%, could override the Supreme Court. Now, that's ridiculous because that would defeat the whole purpose of having a Supreme Court. And there were concerns as well as the makeup of the Supreme Court. There is a broad agreement that there needs to be some reform on the makeup, how Supreme Court justices are chosen. But this issue would have basically given any coalition dictatorial powers, whether they wanted it or not. They would be able to, once you don't have a Supreme Court, you say, well, you got Congress. And no, this is not America. This is Israel. We only have really two branches of government. Since the prime minister, the executive, leads the Knesset, the legislative, they're one entity. So once you take away the Supreme Court, then the Knesset, the parliament, can do whatever it wants to do. And rightly, 66% of Israelis were outraged and against this. And there were massive marches all over the country. And the accusation would be, I don't know this, I can't judge a man's heart, was that because Netanyahu has admitted it was bad policy. It was a mistake. He said when it was first given to him, he knew it was a mistake, but he went along with it. Why? Because he couldn't afford, number one, to lose his coalition partners. That would bring down the government. And number two, those same coalition partners could keep him out of jail by passing an unconstitutional law that a sitting prime minister can't go to jail, and then just overturning the Supreme Court. So with that backdrop, we were a nation completely divided. People were talking about civil war. There were thousands of reservists that were not reporting for duty as protest. And again, at the end of the day, Prime Minister Netanyahu said when Elon Musk interviewed him about 3 months ago that the legislation was a mistake. and then took credit for not passing it. So inside the country, no, he's not very popular, and he probably and shouldn't survive this. I don't care who's prime minister. You can look at George Bush during 9/11. Nobody saw 9/11 coming. We live in the Middle East. We live in the wild, wild East, if you will. We know Hamas is on our border. One day, someone's going to have to give an account, or some ones are going to have to give an account as to why our southern border was unguarded. And by the way, there's some great interviews out there of these all-female tank crews that took out 50 terrorists, that defended people. So there was heroic action.
And there were warnings that came to the IDF, and some reached Netanyahu, and you know why those weren't heeded. Many, 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 many answers that need to come still. But here's the point I want to make. You just heard my friend Ron speak very strongly against the current government and prime minister as a Messianic Jew. We're not sitting here blindly defending everything. When we come down on sides, clearly, it's not just out of blind allegiance. We can have plenty of differences, but we're still going to stand in a certain way, and we'll clarify that when we come back. Hey, friends. Dr. Michael Brown here. Do you remember when people thought I was crazy when I said it's not too late for America, that God can still do something in our country? That there is going to be a pushback, a gospel-based moral and cultural revolution. And do you remember when people thought that you were crazy because you felt the same way? Because you believed what I was saying and already felt it in your heart? Well, friends, that pushback is here. The gospel-based moral and cultural revolution we've been talking about for 25 years is unfolding. And we are right in the thick of it, and the Line of Fire broadcast is divinely positioned for such a time as this. Friends, you would be so gratified and blessed as I hear, if you could hear what I hear, testimony after testimony as leaders, young people, old people, moms, dads, students, people from all backgrounds come up to me and say, Dr. Brown, you're providing a template for us. You're providing a blueprint for us. You're showing us how to do this, how to have hearts of compassion, backbones of steel. But friends, it's a joint effort. We do this together. And with your support, we can amplify this broadcast around the nation and amplify this voice to shake the nation. Join our support team today. Become a torchbearer with a dollar or more per day. Here's the number to call to sign up. 800-538-5275. That's 800-538-5275, or go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and become a monthly supporter. Click on Donate Monthly Support. I want to immediately give you two classic books, Compassionate Father or Consuming Fire, Who is the God of the Old Testament, and Revolution, which will really show you what it means to be a Jesus follower today. Plus, you get free access to our online classes and so much more. Sign up today, askdrbrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday with Michael Brown here on the Line of Fire. Friends, the reality is these days, every single one of us who knows the Lord and stands for the Lord, we are in the Line of Fire. We're here to help infuse you with faith and truth and courage so you can stand strong on the front lines. If you're not getting our emails, we are going to be sending out a brand new frontline newsletter. Frontline to equip you on the front lines. It's going to be inspirational, informational, and something you'll look forward to every month when it comes. It'll be coming your way free. If you're getting our emails, you get it automatically. If not, sign up today, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. back to my friend and guest, Ron Cantor. And Ron, we'll give contact info for those that want to follow you and be in touch with you. So you and I are quite dogmatic in our stance against what would be called replacement theology. People who hold to it don't like to use that term. We feel it's accurate, and we'll explain that in a moment. We're quite adamant about Israel's right to defend itself. We're quite adamant that Israel has had no other choice, moral choice, but to go into Gaza and do its best to eradicate Hamas. We're quite dogmatic in terms of Israel doing its best to minimize civilian casualties, whereas Hamas does its best in many ways to maximize civilian casualties, even among its own people. So we have these very strong views, but it's not blind support for everything Israel does. It's not blind sanctioning or just cheering on the prime minister or the government, or we can't speak out against it. And that's why I wanted to let you just share your heart, as you've been very vocal and very clear and very strong on these points. And it is very different. You know, when I was at Christ at the Checkpoint in 2018 and spoke, I wanted to ask all the Palestinian Christians there, will you stand together with me and denounce Hamas? And I realized I can't do that, because I'm going to put them in a situation where if they stand, they may pay for it severely. So you're talking two different governments, two different worlds, two different settings. But Ron, why is it, despite your criticism of the prime minister, despite your uneasiness with the direction of aspects of the current government and people, you know, some of the ones that we'd say are very bad apples in the midst of it, why are you so dogmatically standing with Israel and saying Israel is doing the right thing and trying to conduct war the right way? Why are you still so dogmatic about it?
That's a great question. And it's because Israel is bigger than one person. Israel is bigger than one government. The concept of Israel, first of all, there's the biblical restoration of Israel. You know, anybody who says that Israel is not a fulfillment of prophecy, it must be a huge believer in miracles, because there is no such thing as a people being separated from their physical geographical homeland for more than two or three generations, and even being an identifiable people group, much less coming back. The fact that Jewish people stayed an identifiable people group for 2,000 years and then came back in their weakest position after the Holocaust and rebirthed the nation could only have been the hand of God. So that's number one, is it is the greatest modern fulfillment of prophecy that we have. Number two is Israel is a democracy, despite the fact, you know, that I may disagree with Netanyahu, the very fact that I can disagree with him publicly and vocally shows how different it is than just about any other of our neighbors. Try doing that in Saudi Arabia or Syria or Iran. You know, you would be arrested, if not killed. So the values of Israel, and again, if you just look at the video of the terrorists versus the people that they attacked, you know, many of them, by the way, would be the very the ones in the south are the typically kibbutznikim, left-wing peace activists, people that would be much more for a Palestinian state than others. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that they killed.
Yep.
And I got to be honest, I'm not against Palestinians. I'm not against Arabs. I'm not even 100% opposed to a Palestinian state. If there could be a leadership within the Palestinian entity that actually cared for them, that wanted to govern, that wanted to build economy. I mentioned when we left Gaza, we wanted to help them build their farming, their agriculture, and instead they burned down the greenhouses and burned down the farms that we gave them. So until we can find a partner, that's going to be impossible. But I want to ask one last thing to your listeners.
Yeah.
Imagine here in America, let's just imagine that Canada invaded America, and then they took 3,360 hostages. That would be the equivalent, 15 times 242. So they took over 3,000 hostages. Let me just ask our viewers, our listeners, what would be too much for America to do to get them out? Let's just suppose the Canadian government, Canadian government's quite left-wing, but let's suppose they were just terrorists, they were crazy, and they kidnapped over 3,000, your children. One of them was your child, one of them was your mother. What would be too much to get them back? That's what we're facing in Israel. So when people look at the TV and they see the bombing, nobody, I don't know any Israeli who wants Palestinian children to die. I certainly don't. But I want those hostages back. And I'm not a military commander, and I'm not privy to all the plans about why they did what they did. But here's what I do know. Without the bombing that took place after October 7th, not one hostage would have been returned. Mm-hmm. Not one. The only reason Hamas has been really, and they're dealing like we've never seen. You know, the going rate used to be, you know, one live Israeli soldier for 1,000+ terrorists. Yeah. Now it's 3-1. So why, again, they think of humanity in terms of currency. We don't. But why has their price come down? Because they were near destruction. They had lost control of Gaza. They had lost control of the people. They had fled south. And they were basically, you know, probably another week or two, and we would have killed them. The problem is they would have killed the hostages. So we ended up doing, by negotiating, we did something that's probably going to get more of our soldiers killed, that's going to hurt us, but we do that because we're humane. That's the difference between Hamas and Israel. We actually care about our people. Hananya, the leader of Hamas in Qatar, he says that the Palestinian blood, the blood of the Palestinian people belongs to Hamas, and they'll use it for the revolution. That's how they look at their own people, as currency that they can use for a revolution, where we look at our sisters, our daughters, our grandmothers, grandfathers, and they're people that are dearly beloved, and will even risk more soldiers dying to bring them back. That's why I support Israel. It's the values. You know, even though I may disagree with Netanyahu, I love him. You know, he's a fellow Israeli. He's part of my country. There's much I respect about him, but I disagree with him. But I definitely don't disagree with the concept of the state of Israel. It's the only free nation in the Middle East. It's the only nation in the Middle East where you can speak your mind, where you have freedom of, and again, I'm a minority as a Messianic Jew, and I feel protected. My wife and I, since October 7th, we have been all throughout the South ministering to soldiers, providing, finances for survivors. And I don't ever worry about myself as a Messianic Jew. I'm going to hurt, so I'm going to try. We have freedom. Do people agree with me all the time? Of course not. But the concept of the state of Israel, the democracy within Israel, it's different than anything in the Middle East, and certainly different than the Palestinian Authority or Hamas in Gaza.
And you think of groups like Queers for Palestine, and I mean, everybody looks at that and thinks, "What?"
That's like Jews for Hitler. I mean, honestly, you Queers for Palestine. I don't wish this upon them. But if those same people actually went into Gaza, they wouldn't last a week before they'd be killed.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to have a gay pride protest marching down the street, or you're just going to be a radical feminist, and you're going to be who you are.
Yeah.
And lady, you do you, and you dress how you want to dress. That's the last thing you do as a free person or as a living person.
Right.
And ironically, we're not proud of it. But Israel, there's plenty of radical feminists all. I mean, there's a strong positive feminist spirit within Israel, and, you know, leaders like Golda Meir over the years. And then there's the radical feminist ideology we wouldn't agree with, but it's quite welcome in Israel, along with gay prides and all the rest, gay pride parades,
exactly.
Etc. So what it is, the common element is hatred of the Jews. The common element is siding with a demonic spirit, and that's what we're trying to get people to understand. So Ron, I want to go back to this point. You live in Israel, you're a communicator, so you're dealing with lots of different people. You're a leader, so you're hearing from lots of different people. You're saying that the Israeli populace, they're not celebrating, they're not handing out candy, they're not dancing in the streets with reports of Palestinian children, babies, women being killed. This does not excite and animate the Israelis like, yes, the only good Arab is a dead Arab. Yes. You're not hearing those sentiments?
Let me be very clear. No. obviously, I am sure I could find certain Israelis who are like that, just like in every culture. You have people who are undesirables, who have views that we don't like. But I have been traveling all over Israel since October 7th. I have not met one person that has had any sense of joy or glee about the bombing of Gaza. They may see it as necessary. There's no joy. That's not going to bring their mother back or their sister back. What has brought joy is the hostages coming home. That has brought a sense of relief. We're not out to kill. We're out to get our living people back. So, no, there is no widespread sentiment that we need to kill the Arabs.
Yeah, and again, you're going to find extremists in all societies and all sides. But sadly, the Palestinians, because of radical Islamic ideology, because of the leadership they've been under, because of decades of indoctrination from state TV and in schools, and from government pressure, and then from being bombed, and when there's retaliation against Hamas, the large numbers of the Palestinians have been radicalized. And in a recent poll, 75% actually supported the actions of Hamas on October 7th. They of course, they don't believe that they did committed all the atrocities that they did. But what's interesting, Ron, was that the percentage was higher in the so-called West Bank than it was within Gaza. Obviously, people within Gaza are going to be even less able to speak freely. But the reality the reality is that they suffer under Hamas. They realize that something is wrong. And if the money that the international community had poured into Hamas, into Gaza over the years, the same as Palestinian Authority, if it had actually reached the people, they'd be living wonderfully. And the whole world that they live in would be totally different. All right, we got one more segment with Ron Cantor. I want to talk about the advance of the good news of Yeshua in the midst of this, and why we're so dogmatic theologically when it comes to Israel. We'll be right back.
This is Michael Ellison, founder of Trivita Wellness. I want you to hear an amazing testimony from my friend James Robison, and most all of you will know of him. He and his wife, Betty, host the Life Today television program. Now, here is James.
Let me tell you about a miracle I experienced. My friend, Michael Ellison, he and his wife are our 40-year-plus best friends. Well, let me just say this to you. I had so much pain with what was called tennis elbow that I could hardly reach over and pick up the phone without pain, without it hurting me. I couldn't pick up something to drink, a glass of tea or anything. It was very difficult to do anything without wearing a tight strap. And then Michael shared the Nopal cactus juice with me, Nopalea. I began drinking about that much in the morning in a glass and that much later in the day. And in 3 months, I was a different person. I have now gone more than 10 years with no pain. Not better, well, I have no joint pain. I'm telling you, it did something to the inflammation in my body that was undeniable. Now, that's just my testimony. But that's been more than 10 years with no pain. Matter of fact, if I miss, for some foolish reason, a few days, I can feel it creeping back that fast. So give it a try. See if it helps relieve your pain. I hope it does like it has mine, because it worked for me.
Nopalea is supported by clinical studies for lowering inflammation and improving mobility, flexibility, and range of motion in the neck, back, and joints for less reliance on pain medication and improved quality of life. Call 800-771-5584 and use promo code BROWN25 to receive 25% off your order. As a new customer, 100% of your order goes to support the Line of Fire. Call 800-771-5584 or go online to trivita.com.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on the Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
right, we've got one more segment on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday with my dear friend of decades, Ron Cantor. Ron, if folks want to connect with you and your ministry work, where do they go?
It's real simple. It's my name, roncantor.com. Our ministry is Messiah's Mandate, but the easiest way to find Messiah's Mandate is just go to roncantor.com. You can sign up there for our newsletter. We'll send you a free book. And we've been sending out email updates since October 7th, almost on a daily basis.
All right, and that's Cantor, spelled C-A-N-T-O-R, roncantor.com. Okay, Ron, how are things going in the midst of this as far as open doors to declare the good news of Yeshua and give hope in this world and eternally in the midst of the pain and the upheaval?
Well, you know, let's just talk a little bit about history. Of course, you wrote, you know, powerful book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood. There's just a horrible history between the church and the Jewish people. Incredible persecution, bad theology led to bad actions. Jewish people were told that they could not be Jewish and believe in Jesus, that there's no such thing. Jewish people were persecuted, some even killed for the sin of faking becoming a Christian and then going back to Judaism. The church would arrest them. We could go in through the Crusades and the Inquisition, all that. All that leading to the Holocaust, which was built on the theology of Martin Luther and others, not that Hitler was a Christian. So that's always what we're fighting against. You know, this history, that's the first thing a Jewish person is going to say is, how can you believe what those people believe? And they have a hard time understanding that those people weren't true believers. It was a name only. Nevertheless, as we go out, you know, we are doing everything we can right now to be a blessing to Israel, following Matthew 5:16, which says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. So there's the preaching of the good news with action, which is what we are doing. And I'm also hearing incredible reports of people being open to the message of the gospel. I got a newsletter yesterday from One for Israel, an excellent media outreach ministry in Israel, dear friends of ours. And they wrote that the son of a family that's close to them wrote to them and said, quote, our son continues to have opportunities to share his faith with fellow soldiers. He's in the IDF. He reports that the atmosphere amongst them is unlike anything he has ever experienced. They're actively seeking and sharing questions about his faith in Yeshua. After his last home leave, he took back a stack of New Testaments to give away. So certainly in times like these, people have a lot of questions. Where's God? Why did he let this happen? Our ministry, Shelano TV, which is the only 24/7 Hebrew-speaking gospel station in Israel, really in the world, Israel is the only Hebrew-speaking nation, we're right now putting together a video called Shalom Amiti, which means true peace, and different Israelis from all walks of life addressing what happened on October 7th, but then saying, you know, whatever trauma you're going through, whatever you're going through, the true peace can be found in the Messiah. So I do think there's a window right now, and we have something that really no nation, other nation has, a promise of end time revival. The Bible says, Romans 11:26, Kol Yisrael Yibasha, all Israel will be saved. Zechariah prophesies that they will look upon the Jewish people of Jerusalem, will look upon the one whom they have pierced and mourn for him like one mourns for an only son. So we are getting ready for that revival, and I do believe we're going to see more and more come to faith.
Yeah, absolutely. And some say, well, how dare you do this at a time like this? Well, first, this is the message of God's love and God's hope. And a time when people are hurting, do we withhold the best news from them? And second, it's hand in hand with all types of humanitarian work, which Messianic ministries are on the front lines of doing. But of course, what else would you expect us to do to honor the Lord and to care for our own people? So, Ron, you've been in university studies in recent years, getting a master's and now going beyond that, and you've read about different theologies. People today, Christians today, reject and resent the term replacement theology when we use it. And they say it doesn't describe their beliefs accurately. No one's replacing Israel. Israel's always represented the people of God, mainly Jews, but Gentiles as well. Let's just expand it. Or it's the same theology, but the promises just come through Jesus. It's fulfillment theology or expansion theology, but it's not replacement theology, because they know what's happened through church history, the horrible history of church persecution of Jews because of replacement theology, one major factor. What would you say to those who do not believe Israel today is fulfillment of prophecy, who do not believe that national promises remain for the Jewish people, but who would say, hey, I don't hold to replacement theology? How would you respond to that?
I would ask them, who is their God? What God do you believe in? Do you believe in a God who keeps his promises, or a God who breaks his promises? Do you believe in a God who tricks people into thinking he's going to be faithful to them only to turn against them? Or do you believe in a God who's faithful to all of his covenant promises? Because the God of the Hebrew Bible made incredible promises to Abraham, and he used the word le'olam, le'olam va'ed, which means forever and ever. So if God comes to somebody and says, I'm going to be faithful to your physical children, this land is going to be their land, and it's a covenant that will last forever and ever. And then he says, at the death of Yeshua, tricked you. You thought when I said forever and ever, I meant forever and ever, but I really meant just until Jesus died. And now I'm rejecting you in favor of this new entity called the Ecclesia of the Church. So that's my question, is what God do you believe in? Because if God could break all of those promises in the Hebrew Bible to the Jewish people that he affirms over, he affirms it to Isaac, to Jacob, Jeremiah affirms it, David affirms it, the promises of God to Israel, to the physical children of Abraham, are affirmed over and over and over in the Hebrew and in the New Testament. So much of it from, through the words of Simeon, he's come as a light to the nations and the hope of Israel. When Paul goes to meet with the Jews in Rome when he's under house arrest, he talks about Jesus being the hope of Israel, the long-awaited Messiah. So if you're suddenly going to say that this God has broken those promises, then I would have to say you don't believe in the God of the Bible. And, maybe God would have a lot more mercy than me. I'm hoping that he does. But that's theologically, as a theologian, that's how I see it. The God of the Bible, either he's faithful to his promises or he breaks his promises. And then, like I said earlier, you look at the nation of Israel. It's an actual nation. How is that even possible that a people could wander for 2,000 years and then their nation is restored? Their language, Hebrew was a dead language 150 years ago. Their language is restored. And then everybody's tried to kill us. There's been 50, we used to say 52 attempted genocides against the Jewish people. Now it's 53 after October the 7th. And yet we still survive. That could only be the hand of God, the faithfulness of God. So if someone was a replacement or fulfillment theologian before 1948, they might be able to convince me. Look, the Jews, it's clear they're cursed. They've wandered. Nobody likes them. And yet, after 1948, we become a nation again. We become one of the most powerful nations of the world. We have some of the technology that is in the phone that I'm using to speak with you. Some of that comes out of Israel. Intel chips are made in Israel. The farming and agricultural inventions that come out of Israel, this tiny little nation of less than roughly 9 million people, is changing the world. So much so that those who are our sworn enemies are making peace with us because they want our technology and our security. So it's very hard for me to understand how anybody, but let me say this one last thing. I was going to say how anybody could be a replacement theologian. I asked somebody this the other day. I said, how many people do you know who once believed replacement theology and now they believe that Israel people are still God's covenant people. They believe that Israel, and hundreds, thousands, right? You know that. Don Finto comes to mind. So many people. And then I ask, how many people do you know who were once Zionists, once, you know, believed that God's covenant with Israel was forever, and they became replacement? Now, I'm sure there's somebody out there. I don't know anybody.
Well, you know what's interesting, Ron? I have seen it happen, and I've heard people tell their story. But what it normally is when they became, quote, theologically more sophisticated. In other words,
right.
And these are my words, not theirs, when they didn't just take the word at face value in that regard, or where they had some issue with Israel. And I just want to read this passage, Jeremiah 33, beginning verse 23. The word of the Lord came to Jeremiah. Have you not noticed that these people are saying, the Lord has rejected the two kingdoms he chose, so they despise my people and no longer regard them as a nation? This is what the Lord says. If I have not made my covenant with day and night and established the laws of heaven and earth, then I will reject the descendants of Jacob and David my servant, and will not choose one of his sons to rule over the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, for I'll restore their fortunes and have compassion on them. Has God kept his promises to the line of David through Jesus, Yeshua? Absolutely. Is God keeping his promises to the descendants of Jacob? And no one calls the church the new Jacob. We are the new Jacob. No. Promises to Jacob, Israel, the descendants. It is God's hand. It is God's mercy. It is God's promise. Hey, connect with my friend Ron Cantor at roncantor.com. And let us pray for God's hand in the Middle East, for his protection of the innocent, and for the salvation of Jews and Muslims in this urgent hour. Ron, thanks for joining us today. Love you, man. We're standing with you.
Great to be with you guys.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.